MechCast, Wednesday, July 20th, 2016. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to another episode of the MacCast. Well, as you may or may not know, I have been on the road for a little while. Actually, July is going to be a month where I'm on the road quite a bit. So here I am bringing you a MacCast using my mobile setup. This one might sound a little bit different. And actually, one of the reasons that I am out on the road is I attended MacStock 2016. A great conference. I think I told you a little bit about it leading up to July, but if you haven't had a chance to go to the show, or if you haven't had a chance to learn about it, we're going to do that in this episode, because I have my friends Victor Cahiao and George Starcher. They were both at the conference as well, and we're going to give you a little recap of what went on, some of our impressions of the show, and tell you a little bit more about it, so you may be interested in putting it on your schedule for next year. I can just tell you real quickly, the show was a lot of fun. It was a great time, and I learned a lot. So we're going to get into that in this episode. But before we get started, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Smile. And today I want to tell you a little bit more about Text Expander. There's actually a new version of Text Expander out, in case you've missed it. And as you know, I am a Text Expander user. It is an indispensable tool for me. It is on all of my Macs, all of my iOS devices, and the new version makes it even easier for you to do that, because you get all the versions for one single price. And what is Text Expander, in case you don't know what it is? Well, it is a great way to save time, to save on typing, any of those things that you need to do where you find yourself typing the same thing over and over again. Could be an email address, an email signature. I'm a programmer, so often I'm using the same code snippets or chunks of code, brand messages. If you're in customer service or you're dealing with helping people with technology, it's a great way to put in little snippets for directions, information. There's all kinds of things that you'll find you'll want to store in a snippet. And basically with Text Expander, you create a shortcut, and all you have to do is type the shortcut instead of typing all of that text, and it saves you a lot of time. And it has really powerful features like fill-in fields that you can add to your snippets. That means you can customize those responses. So you might have certain things that you type where there's just one or two words that are different. You can have those automatically be filled in. There's automation. And with the new version, they've got a focus on groups and sharing snippets with others. So if you're in a work group, if you have friends and family, and you all want to share the same snippets, you can now do that. And that helps you expand the common knowledge. Maybe they will come up with a snippet that you haven't heard of. And best of all, they're all kept in sync. They're all kept up to date. It's great if you're in a customer service work group, someone changes a snippet a little bit, maybe an instruction changes a little bit, you can get that change out to everyone. And as I said, Text Expander includes the apps for Mac, for iPhone, for iPad, even for Windows. It's currently in beta, but they're working on it. So you'll have all your snippets on all your devices all the time. It's a really great way to boost your productivity. And they have a couple different options now. They have the Lifehacker subscription that costs just $40 a year and includes all the apps and Text Expander sharing service. You can also upgrade with discounts for registered Text Expander users. And the team subscription is available for your organization-focused snippets and team management, and allows you to do that across all your devices. You have controls in place. So if you're managing a workgroup team, it's a great way to go. Plus, you get consolidated billing and all that good stuff. If you want to check out the Text Expander software, you want to check out what Smile is up to, all you have to do is go to smilesoftware.com/MacCast. There you can get all the information and details. And a big thank you to Smile for their continued support of the MacCast. So with that, let's just get right into talking a little bit about MacStock 2016. Great conference with my friends Victor Cahiao and George Starcher. Hey, how you doing, Victor?
Adam, it's great to see you as always, and it was really great to finally see you out here.
Yeah, it's been way too long, and I'm also here with George Starcher, who you've probably heard on the MacCast before. How are you doing, George?
Doing great, and that's good to see you guys in person for the first time since Macworld.
Has it really been since Macworld? It's going to be a little awkward here because we only have one mic. We're doing this on the mobile rig. Actually, this is another first new kind of thing for the MacCast. I did a little experiment with the MacCast members. I'll cop to that, and over my vacation when I was camping in Pismo Beach, I put out a special episode for MacCast members to test out a new mobile recording setup. So we're actually recording on the iPad Pro using an Audio Technica AT2005 USB mic. So we just have the one mic we're passing around. So if you're hearing a little delay between each person speaking, that's because we're passing the mic around. But yeah, I'm doing good. And we're going to talk a little bit about the conference we were just at, MacStock Expo 2016. It's the second year, although I think for all of us, this was the first year each of us came, right? We missed last year. Were you? None of us were here last year, right, Victor?
Nope, I wasn't here last year. This is the first time.
Yeah. So I guess where I really want to start is just with first impressions. And I'm going to let you go first, Victor. I'll give my impressions as we work back around. But what'd you think?
Well, you know, what's really nice, these things are so much about community and stepping in and seeing old friends and kind of picking up where you left off at Macworld, whatever the last time it was. Now, some people I met here this time for the first time in 10 years, Melissa, Mac Mommy, some of you may know her or not, I'd never met her in 10 years. So having those connections again and seeing them now in person is awesome. And then, you know, seeing a conference put together with the spirit of Macworld and with speakers that clearly were very motivated to be here and speak was really fantastic. Every speaker had a great message, and I learned something out of each one of them.
Yeah, and I think that's really what you want out of, you know, a conference and the kind of sessions and things like that. George, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I had a really good time because it, you know, even when I went to Macworld that one time with you guys, that was pretty much, I just attended the show, right? I wasn't able to get in very many useful sessions. There were a few, but it was just so big, so unwieldy. This is much smaller and tighter. And then each of the speakers is someone that's really active in the community, and they're really good at the areas that they do. And I saw, you know, like Victor's presentation on preview. I mean, I learned a lot of features that I just simply forgot were there or hadn't used. And then the talks we saw on the accessibility for blind people and stuff were just like, you know, I knew those features were there and I understood they were important, but I really didn't grasp them until they were demonstrating how they really use them. And that was, you know, really educational.
So, you know, the main thing I think I have coming away from this conference, and I had heard about it last year. So, unfortunately, last year it kind of coincided with Nerdtacular. My audience knows that's a show that I like to go to, something hosted by Scott Johnson and the Frog Pants Network. So I just couldn't make it out last year. It was the first year of the conference. But, I mean, after that event, I think what really drew me out here this year was I heard nothing but positive reviews from the people who had attended and heard about all the great sessions and things like that. And I think, you know, the key word is probably community, you know, and it was one of those things where Macworld always had that sense of community, but it's such a large conference, right? And so you had little pockets of it. But with a show like this, what I really came away from is the same thing that I get from Nerdtacular at a different level. You know, Nerdtacular is more about just tech. It's got kind of a gaming focus. It's got a geek pop culture kind of focus. It's a different show. So this has the same vibe, but really focused on the Mac community. And I think it's represented by a lot of the presenters. Would you agree, Victor?
No, I absolutely agree. I think, like I mentioned before, you get this spirit of people who can clearly are passionate about Macintosh, Apple, and you know, in our community, it happens to be a lot of podcasters. Yes, a lot of the presenters were podcasters, but what they were bringing to the table was something that they were clearly passionate about, and then they pass it on, and you know, and I got it. Like George, I was able to get a lot out of things like the you know people that were not sighted, and you know what they have to do something that I take for granted, and it made me spring up and say before I did my presentation, hey, what can I do to give you the presentation in a format that is going to be more pleasing to you? I hadn't come to that place. Others have, and I went, wow, it just, so things like that bring it home. And then you've got the hallway talk, right, Adam? I mean, that's the other aspect where, how do you measure something like that?
Yeah, I think hallway talk is always something that you want to get from these conferences. And again, that's a big part of the community. And I think you probably felt that community aspect as well, right, George?
Oh, absolutely. And you couple that with the Barry's Midwest Barbecue that he tacks on to this thing. Yeah, Midwest Mac Barbecue. And then you have people like Ken Ray, who, you know, when I left Nashville, he was in Nashville visiting his family. And then, you know, he shows up here for the barbecue, you know, and that was just awesome to see, you know, someone that I hadn't seen in a few years show up, be able to, you know, talk to him, hang out for a little while and all that. It was really great.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up Ken Ray, because I want to comment just on, in case anybody hadn't checked it out before, I know I let you know about it as it was coming up, and I talked about some of the speakers that were coming, but just not only just the speakers, but some of the people that were there as well. So, of course, Victor did some presenting, I did some presenting, but you had Dr. Robert Carter, you had Wally Winsky. I always mess up his name. Poor Wally. Sorry, Wally. You know, Melissa Davis, the Mac Mommy, David Ginsburg, Allison Hartley. I probably can't name everybody. Matt Hiller, Chuck Joyner, Julie Keel. I'm going to name everybody because I think it's important. Absolutely. Don McAllister, Tom Piper. If anybody doesn't know, anybody who's been involved with user groups, I was really happy to finally meet Tom because I've been involved with user groups. Anybody who listens to my show knows that I'm a big fan of user groups. I've been on the board of directors of the Portland Mac user group when I lived there in Portland, Oregon. And he's been around forever. He's been running the Apple Mac, you know, as the liaison for the Mac user group for years and years. He's been involved with that group. You got Tim Robertson, Mike Schmidt, Kirsten, how do you say her last name? Sia. That's right. Sia. I got it right. Like Sia. Guy Searle and Ime. Allison Sheridan made a remote appearance, and now Siri's kicking in because apparently Allison Sheridan sounds like Siri. Yeah, yeah. Like hey, Siri. And Jody Spangler. I mean, the group was just amazing. And then not only that, beyond that, you had guys like David Chartier and Brett Terpstra showed up this year, and Brian Chaffin and Jeff Gamet from Mac Observer. So, you know, you've got a lot of the same kinds of people, the same caliber of people that were going to Macworld. And I think you had a comment, Victor.
I do. You know what I was impressed by was where people were coming from. I mean, you know, Don McAllister all the way from England. We have people from Florida. I came from California. So they were all over the country. So this, you know, when things like this sometimes happen, they tend to get very centralized. But not here. I mean, people were coming from far, far away, because I think if they were second year comers, they got it last year. And I got it this year. And I will make a plan to be here next year because I think this thing's got legs.
Yeah, and I think that was another thing that I got from this conference this year is that there's momentum here. And I think a lot of people are maybe waiting to see, you know, that first year we talked about this a little bit. You know, conferences are really tough. And big props, I forgot to mention, you know, Mike Potter and you know, Barry Falk, the two guys that are kind of responsible for setting this whole thing up. They have done a phenomenal job at finding a great venue, a great place for this thing to happen, and sort of expanding it. I think you have a comment, George.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing about this, too, is that unlike something like Macworld, the talk format's different, right? Every speaker gets 20 minutes, so it's all meat. They're straight to the point. It's very informal and fun, but very informative.
Somebody else's Siri's going off. Apparently, we're saying things that Siri is very interested in. I agree with that. I was a little actually leery of the format, to be honest, being a presenter. Like when they invited me out, I was kind of, you know, 20 minutes is kind of hard to fit a lot of stuff in. And anybody who heard Allison Sheridan's talk, she did a whole thing on photos and she did awesome. It was really awesome. She had to do it remote because she's got a family event thing going on. So she had to kind of change her plans at last minute. I think she was planning on being here. here, but it shifted a little bit. And but she was talking really fast, and Skype was even having a hard time keeping up with Allison, I think. We have a hard time when she's live, but if you hear this, we love you, Allison. It's great. Yeah, and the diversity of the talks, and I do want to get into kind of some of the session stuff. So, and I think a way to do that and maybe give the listeners a feel for, you know, what was presented and what we saw is I'm curious to ask you guys, was there a particular session that you think stood out for you? And I think it's going to be different for each of us. Maybe we might all pick the same thing, but I'm just curious, like Victor, was there like something you saw that you were like, wow, I didn't, you know, I really learned something, or I didn't expect to see that, or in it. And that's what I always find fascinating about these conferences.
Yeah. I think I have to go back to the two presentations that were done by Allison and by Robert on accessibility for people that are handicapped in some fashion. They really brought it home because they engaged us in a way that we're not normally engaged in, and that was by listening to what they go through, because they don't have those visual things and cues. And so to me, it was just very heartfelt. They weren't up there asking for a pity party at all. They were saying, this is how we do business. Come join our world. And this is what Apple has made possible for us in these devices. And here are some of the challenges that we run into, just like you guys run into other challenges being sighted people. But so I think it was very impactful to me because it made me think about something that I take for granted. To me, those moments are what conferences like this should do. They should make you think about something or learn something that maybe you even thought you knew, but you had maybe forgotten.
Yeah. How about you, George?
And I'd certainly agree that those talks were highly impactful in the way they presented them, but not just demonstrating them, but their humor about the situation. Like when Allison made the joke about, you know, well, you know, because there was a lot of discussion of battery life of devices and stuff just here at the conference in general. And then she made the comment about how she extends her battery life because she can put her laptop in privacy mode because she doesn't need to see it. And everyone's just laughing, right? You know, and so that kind of thing was just great. It made it a lot more personal. And then, you know, another session that I liked was yours, Adam, right? You know, on the whole maker educational thing with the robots and the circuitry pieces and all that stuff that you're doing with the kids, because I don't have kids, so it's I like the maker stuff and I play with some of it for me, but to actually see someone trying to use it on an ongoing basis and like you do with your kids to bring them along is really interesting to see.
Yeah, I was really thrilled to get a lot of really great feedback on that topic because it was new for me. And that was one of the things with this conference, because I saw what everybody was doing and the diversity of what everybody was doing. I kind of wanted to break out of my own shell. You know, it inspired me as a speaker, as someone being invited to come talk, you know, to not just do a topic that I've done before on the show. And something more recently I've been getting more involved in is education and my kids and, you know, kind of helping out with the science and technology, the STEAM-based stuff, art, mathematics, engineering. And I realized, you know, I've got access to all these great toys. A lot of them I buy, you know, saying, well, I want to get this because it's going to be great for the kids' education. But to be honest, and I admitted this in my talk, I buy it a lot for me too. You know, it's like we talked about things like the Sphero or Little Bits, or there's a great app, and I think I've made it a pick of the week on the show. If I haven't, I need to do it. I'll have to go back and review. There's a great programming app called Tickle that lets you do programming concepts and teach programming concepts, and you're actually writing Swift code under the hood. People don't know it because you're pulling out these little blocks and modules to create for loops and stuff like that. But then even more importantly is it interacts with actual hardware. So if you have a, you know, you have a drone or you have an Arduino or you have Legos, you can actually write programs that will control those things. So that was a little bit of what my talk was on. And I think they're going to make, I'll have to double check with Mike Potter. I think the stuff will be available to stream. So if you didn't catch my talk, but it looks like you have some comments on that, George.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, we did mention earlier that these formats were 20 minutes and you're saying you covered a lot of stuff. And what we didn't mention was after all the talks were done, there was a couple of deep dive sessions where some of those more popular but more technical talks where there was activity involved and learning involved, like the automation, yours with the Little Bits and the programming app and stuff like that. You got to actually have another second session that actually went into detail that you couldn't do in that 20-minute format.
Yeah, and I liked being able to break those up. I think 20 minutes is kind of the perfect time. It's challenging as a presenter to try and figure that out. I mean, you can probably talk to this, Victor. I want to comment really quickly on a presentation that I saw
that really surprised me, and it was Matt Hillier's, which was looked to be highly technical. So the topic was, I got to just read the topic because you'll hear this and you'll probably go, oh, I don't know if I'd be interested in that. So the topic was Macs in the Enterprise vSphere ESXi virtualization. And I had no clue what that was. Well, it turns out it's a product from VMware. And a lot of us, you know, on the commercial side are probably more familiar with VMware Fusion or Parallels. It was a virtualization topic. And I thought he did an excellent job of making it relevant for the audience. Like, I got a lot out of that talk in terms of, you know, I set up, you know, virtualized environments. But like he mentioned, hey, on my Mac, I built a whole one that was about building a Minecraft server for my kids. And my kids are into Minecraft. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I could see myself taking an old Mac and running this on there and setting up a chat server and a Minecraft server, you know, for the kids and stuff like that. So it became relevant, and it surprised me because I fully wasn't expecting to hear that. So getting back to what I was saying earlier, Victor, you know, what did you think as a presenter about that format and maybe some of the challenges that it presented?
You know, for me, it presented an opportunity. You know, at first I thought it was going to be a challenge, and oh my goodness, and I was doing something that at face value seems pretty simple. I was going over preview.app and some of the hidden speakers that we may have forgotten. But as a presenter, it made me take a completely different approach to presenting than I've ever done before, because in my professional career, I was trained to present a certain way, and I followed that method for a long time. And I kind of threw that all away this time, and I presented from a completely different place. And it was very stream of consciousness. You know, I knew my material well enough, but I had not really practiced it. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. I decided to have a conversation with a bunch of my friends that happened to be sitting in the audience, so there was no intimidation. And for me, it was joyful to be able to do it that way. Probably one of the best presentations that I've done for me. I have no idea what the audience thought, but I felt like, yep, that's exactly what it's supposed to feel like at the end.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have the other stuff that's kind of going on around the conference. So we've talked a lot about the sessions and sort of the things, but just the venue itself I thought was great. You know, they had a great facility. And then you have great sponsors like OWC, who was there kind of making the whole thing possible, and little giveaways and stuff like that. And I want to point out something that was kind of happening on the side. So there's all those side conversations. I want to get into some of those hallway conversations as well. I know one that I had that particularly interested me is Tim Robertson from the My Mac podcast. I didn't know, he's apparently really into arcade cabinets and old classic arcades. And he had taken a, what's the little iCade, you know, the little iCade cabinet that you would normally put an iPad in. It's got a joystick and buttons. It looks like a little mini arcade. Actually, it started out as a ThinkGeek, I think, April Fool's joke. They put it out as a fake product, and it got so much positive feedback that they ended up making it. But, you know, I have one of these, and it's been relegated to the closet because while it was a great concept, you slide your iPad in, there wasn't a lot of game support for it. So you could get a few games here and there, kind of classic games, and it was fun for a while, but it kind of became this kitschy little thing. And I actually got mine on a pretty good discount from Bed Bath & Beyond, believe it or not. It was like $30 on sale because it was on clearance. So I picked one up to play around with it, and it's fun. But, you know, Tim looked at it, and being into that kind of thing, he said, you know, I want to turn this into an actual like arcade machine, you know, a little mini arcade machine. And apparently there's a board that you can get. He's going to send me all the details because I'm like seriously thinking about converting mine into this same sort of system. But, you know, he found an LCD panel, and he found this board and a power supply, and he converted the whole thing into an actual arcade machine that plays, like, I played Dig Dug on it. He had Donkey Kong and Pac-Man and all these classic arcade games. It's the actual ROMs, the actual stuff that would run in a full-size arcade. And it was amazing. And to sit down with him and talk about the project and his passion for it, that was something that I really enjoyed. Was there kind of a side conversation in this that for either of you stood out?
Yeah, I think for me there was that Chuck Joyner had done a great presentation on kind of like, is the future here? And he did some great slides showing, you know, all these things from Star Trek that have come true. And so him and I had some side conversation, as well as with you two, about some of the things that are happening in the automobile world and what it's going to be like, you know, for the self-driving cars in the future, what some of the social implications were. So I had two or three of those conversations in the hallways. And how and what Apple might, their role might be in it in the future. And so those always are great. And of course, the other conversation that went on all over the place was about Pokemon, right? Because this is all that's happening. So there was like two stream of consciousness, you know, one making fun of the whole Pokemon phrase. And then the other one, which I think is more important, is the watershed moment that that technology represents really. When we put all the jokes aside, that from a technological perspective, it's kind of a watershed moment because these technologies are now going to creep into other applications, I believe.
Was there something that stood out for you, George?
Well, yeah, the Pokemon thing was pretty funny because we're driving back from the conference last night to the hotel because I drove up from Nashville. And so Victor's in the passenger seat, and then Adam and MacMommy, Melissa, are in the back seat trying to catch Pokemon off of Victor's shoulder at the stoplight. So that was pretty funny. But for me, it was more of a personal interest thing was, for those of you listen to Ken Ray's show, there's a lady named Linda that comes on, and she's very knowledgeable about investing and particularly Apple, but other stuff too. And, you know, Victor's now retired. You know, I'm getting up there in age. I'm starting to worry and think about this thing. So I'm trying to educate myself in those topics. And so I was able to sit down on the side and I was like, oh my God, it's Linda. And sit down and have some more informational discussion with her about those kinds of ideas, even though they weren't directly related to the conference. But because I knew her through the Apple and Mac community, and I knew that she had that knowledge, I was able to sit down and, you know, pick her brain and see if I was heading down the right road in terms of educating myself and stuff. It was great.
The power of a conference like this is the whole package, right? It's the sessions, it's the people, it's those side conversations, it's actually getting together and meeting face to face, which I think we fall so short on, you know, a lot of times in this day and age. But, you know, we say that, and at the same time, I think there's a lot of that going on because of things like this. So I was really happy that Mike Potter continued this. I think we need to come back to a couple of things that you were talking about, though. Those two side conversations, I think, are interesting to talk about. So in my defense on the Pokemon, because I know people feeling different about this, you know, I have kids. Melissa has kids, you know, and the kids are kind of into it. Although I drew my kids into it. They had nothing, you knew nothing about it. But it came, oddly enough, it came out at the perfect time for me. I was kind of insulated from the whole like craze that was going on a little bit because I was on vacation, I was camping, but I could see in my Twitter stream, you know, it was blowing up, and I knew that it was going to because there was such hype leading up to it. And I was never into Pokemon as a kid. It was kind of, you know, it was kind of after my generation of growing up, but I knew about it. And so I wanted to download the app to check it out because I knew it was going to be kind of interesting. So I had already downloaded the app before I realized it was like exploding on Twitter. But we were camping, and so we were at a place where it's perfectly designed for, because part of the whole game, it seems to me, is it's all about walking around. So we're at this campsite, you know, there's a nice little loop with some walking trails and stuff like that. And so they had like little locations. Generally, the locations where you play the game are landmark locations, like, you know, signs, entrance to certain public monuments and you know, national parks, and we were at a state park and stuff like that. So it was kind of perfect. And really what drove me into it was, you know, kids are kids, and you're at a campsite for a week, and my two daughters got into something, and one of them kind of got upset, and I said, you know, let's go for a walk. And she's really into technology and video games and stuff like that. So I thought, well, let's open this up and she'll probably have fun with it and it'll kind of distract her. And we had a great time just spending some time together. So as much as it's technology, and sometimes people talk about, you know, kids play too many video games, what was great about this was we were interacting, we were talking, and you know, she would get excited when we'd find one, we'd play it, and it was a kind of a really nice attraction. So I was a little bit insulated from a lot of the hype, and then I saw all the hype going on. So when Melissa got in, she's like, "Yeah, you need to tell me how all this stuff works, because I got to work with my kids." So that was kind of what was going on there. But the bigger conversation I want to come back to that I think is interesting, and because I just had a lot of great insights. It started when Guy Searle from, again, the My Mac podcast, he graciously offered to pick me up from the airport and bring me out. And we started talking about this whole Apple Car thing. And he's got his own theories and stuff like that. And we started going back and forth. And it really got me thinking about, you know, is Apple going to bring out an electric vehicle, you know, what's the approach? And I know we've been talking about this a lot, but what happened to me this time around was kind of rethinking. You know, a lot of people seem to think, well, you know, Apple is just going to build a car and sort of follow Tesla's lead, or they might do an autonomous thing like Google. But after having a number of conversations, I think I've come to the conclusion, I think it's going to be something different. I think you're going to take a different approach to it. So it sounds like maybe you had some of those kinds of conversations too, Victor. So what kind of insights do you think you got from here on, you know, the future of Apple Car or otherwise?
Yeah, it's part of that was conversations we had after that. And it was about, you know, maybe it's a service, you know. And so we have to kind of think about it from a different perspective. And I had that conversation with a couple of different people because surely by 2020, I had told Adam and George that Elon Musk had just done a talk. And he had said that, you know, by 2020, we're going to be there, whether it's his company. And then they talked about what other companies do you fear in the space, you know, the traditional car makers or someone like Google. It's like, nope, none of those. Apple, different story. Yeah. So I think whether Adam, you mentioned about a service, and I went, huh, I really need to rethink this because of what you said about what their approach had been in a telephone. You know, and I came from the telephony world, and when the iPhone came, they disrupted an entire industry based on a completely different way of thinking about something that I thought telephone companies knew more than anybody about. So, and I think your proposition is that perhaps this is Apple's going to be play on this thing as well.
Yeah.
And so I sat down at the barbecue with Mike LaPlante from Ken Ray's iChart magazine, and Mike's in the auto industry type stuff. And so we were talking and came to the sort of same conclusion. It's like, what problems, you know, look at it from the other direction. What problem are they really trying to solve? They're trying to try to solve the transportation problem. That doesn't mean selling cars. It could be delivering a vehicle. And then you start thinking about CarPlay. It's like, that's a perfect building block as it matures, that if I summoned, you know, an Apple Cart or Apple Car or whatever.
Johnny Ive cab.
Nice. Yeah. But anyway, so you can imagine this thing coming to get you, and suddenly you don't have to make a car payment. You don't have car insurance. You don't have to worry about all these oil changes and maintenance and all of that that goes with it. You don't have to worry about the Tesla problem of, I buy a car that's fully loaded with batteries, and by the time I pay off my car loan, what's the capacity of those batteries? Do they give me a mechanism to refresh it before I can resell the car? All those problems go away. And then you add in CarPlay, and suddenly if I'm an iPhone customer and I get into one of these vehicles, that car is instantly customized to my phone for the duration that I'm in it. And as soon as I get out, it becomes someone else's.
Yeah. I mean, really what happened to me when I started having these conversations is there's still a lot of people, and this could be exactly what happens. Apple could follow the lead of any other car manufacturer and just be building an electric vehicle or an autonomous vehicle that kind of conforms to the roadways and the systems and the way that we travel today. But as I was having the conversations, I started thinking more and more about, like you said, George, you know, what is the problem to be solved here? And Apple's always been very good, if you look at their history, of, you know, taking an existing thing where every company's kind of chasing the next generation of the existing model of something. So, you know, MP3 players, or whether it's smartphones or something like that, right? You know, or a touchscreen tablet. You know, Microsoft was trying to take a PC when they did the tablet PC and do something that you wrote on, you know. But when Apple looks at the iPad, they go, you know, no, that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a new computing platform. We're trying to create something completely different. And they brought a different approach to it. And then when I started thinking like that with the vehicle, it's like, oh, maybe they're not trying to just create the next generation of car, because that's not what they do. They're looking at, you know, what is the transportation problems that we have? What are the challenges? What are the frustrations for people? And how do we build something that solves some of those frustrations? And I think you're right, you know, with a lot of, and then you start thinking about infrastructure and roadways and, you know, how do we drive? And when you start thinking about it that way, and you start thinking about, you know, Apple's not thinking about the future of cars and transportation 5 years from now. They're looking at it like, how are people going to be moving around 20 years from now? And when I started thinking about that, the thing that I immediately leapt through was the car service that they invested in China. And then that got me thinking like, okay, wait, China, you know what? We as Americans, we have a car culture, but we're really unique when you start to think about Europe and Asia and all these other places, right? So our way of thinking about cars is not the global way of thinking about cars. And we live in a global economy. Apple's a global company. So they're probably not thinking about solving an American transportation problem necessarily. They want to solve a global, you know, global transportation challenges. And then you think, well, yeah, a car service. You know, what if Apple had a fleet of vehicles that they deployed and, you know, almost like an Apple Music subscription, you said, I need a car X amount of times, or even an iCloud subscription where it's variable. You know, I need this vehicle X amount of times, and I don't want it, like you said, just be able to summon it.
And then it's become smart because it knows your calendar through CarPlay and all that stuff. So it now knows that you need to go from here to the grocery store to there. And so it knows whether you need more time, whether, you know, in which direction you're going, and just even just take you there automatically unless you override it.
Yeah. And again, you know, to be clear, and I mentioned this to several people when I started talking about this, I mean, it sounds pie in the sky. It sounds like way, way out there. But that's the kind of thinking that I think Apple does, and they will develop it and bring out a solution. Now, are they going to do it right away? Is it going to be the first thing that they introduce? Where are they at with it? And when I started thinking about that, I thought, you know, this is probably all things, a lot of the rumors, if you start to backpedal the rumors that we're hearing and stuff into this, that's why I think the rumors are maybe it's an autonomous vehicle, maybe it's an electric car, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. I think it's because Apple really hasn't figured out what that thing is yet. I think they're still experimenting and then Victor, I think it was you mentioned the Elon Musk 2020 date, and it clicked with me because everything we've been hearing, well, Apple will be ready with whatever they're going to do in 2020. And I'm like, wow, there's the timing. So it was like, that all came out of this conference, which was amazing to me because I had not been thinking about that in any way. But it took the melding of minds, all these creative people who are involved in the Mac community, and drawing little bits and pieces from what everybody said to kind of, for me to look at that and reach that conclusion. And I could be totally wrong, right? But it's a great thought experiment to kind of have.
It is. And another thing that plays into, let's call it just a theory, your theory around that, the service theory, is another thing Elon Musk said, that the technology is not the problem. You know, governance becomes the problem in this. And so this plays right into that, right? So maybe Apple, maybe ultimately wants to build an autonomous car, but a really great baby step that there's going to be governance on services that run autonomous cars first, because it's a more controlled way to do it. So if your theory is correct, it would be easier in 2020 to have governance that allows a company to run a service with autonomous cars than maybe me going out and buying a completely autonomous cars, because the governance for that will not be completed in the US. Who knows about other countries?
Right. And I mean, and to sort of George's point about some of those solutions, like, you know, what if I didn't have to pay car insurance? What if I didn't have to pay registrations? That's going to be a long time coming, because there's going to be a lot of pushback from governments. And those are revenue sources right now. And so they have to sort of redefine, you know, what happens if, as a state, I'm not collecting car registration money or all these, you know, and so they're not going to be really happy about that. So it starts to, it's like a domino effect. There's like all these, you know, things that you start, one thought leads to the next thought. And that's what I love about stuff like this. And I don't know that that would happen if I was just sitting at home, you know, not having these face-to-face conversations with people.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, you know, what is it, the 10-year iPhone experiment now? So Apple comes, disrupts the iPhone or the telephone industry. Now it's been 10 years. Now, you know, we're not flying because of iPhones, but the things that we can do with iPhones now around health that are starting to take off, around you know, things like being able to order Ubers, these services that came out of this platform that are kind of fingers that have come out, you know, of the platform, is where our lives are truly being changed in ways that it's not only about the device. Well, if we think about transportation in the same way, it may not be year one that whatever Apple comes up with shakes our life forever. We may be wowed, but it may be 10 years later that those after effects and services that come out of that experiment really have a major impact in our lives.
Yeah,
I completely agree with that point, because when the iPhone came out, now I didn't get the first one, but when I got in the 3GS level, and it was great and I enjoyed it. But now with the 6, you know, I'm IT security guy. I do a lot of stuff. I do coding stuff. But when it comes down to it, the primary computer I use is my iPhone. That's the one I'm upgrading. My iMac is old. My personal laptop's getting older. Yes, my work laptop is, you know, top notch, but when it comes to my personal device and where I spend my money to upgrade and stay current, it's that iPhone.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, that's actually a good transition, because at this conference, I was noticing that as well. You know, that there were a lot of people that were focusing on using an iPad. Like, I think, you know, Guy Searles was all about doing a podcast on an iPad. And Allison Hartley in her talk mentioned that, you know, yeah, mentioned that her primary computing device became really her iPhone because of all of the accessibility features that are built into that that just fit into how she does her computing. Now, you know, not all of us are that far into it, but I, you know, since getting my iPad Pro, and I've talked about this on my show, I've had this desire to do more and more with my iPad Pro just because of the portability and the convenience. And now that I'm doing podcasts on it, you know, this is my experiment. I've been trying to force this on myself, and I use this trip as an excuse to kind of do it. And lo and behold, an experience that I was very tentative and afraid of has turned out to be really great. And that happens a lot with, you know, Apple technology and stuff like that. And I think that's because of, again, to kind of bring it back, it's the community, it's the experience. You know, the app that I'm using to record the podcast right now is an app called Ferrite. I found out about that from Jason Snell. And, you know, and it was something, you know, Guy was using something called BossJock, which looks like amazing. I didn't know about that. That was another great thing. And I'm going to definitely check out that application on the iPad. But just those workflows and finding out about all that stuff. It's another thing that I've always been a big proponent of the Apple user group, because that's where those interactions happen. And had I not been here, you know, I follow Guy on Twitter. I know what he's up to. I kind of, you know, he's in the community, but he's on, for me, typically on the periphery of my community. I'm not always interacting, you know, with him, but come to a conference like this and it's like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, and I think that we also, as users, sometimes, like you said, our communities can get very narrow. And like many of you out there, our communities, because we watch a lot of the same Twitter feeds or we listen to the same news sources, so those become kind of narrow, and we forget the power that there is in these numbers. When you get around these people and then you start just hearing little things or dropping little hints along the way, and that it can expand our mind. You know, we may be used to hearing 4 or 5 other Mac pundits that we're like, those are the people I'll always listen to. That's it. But we forget that there's a lot of us, just like you, that have these little tips and tricks that we can all benefit from. Even people like Adam who do this every day for a living. I'm sure you learned a bunch of stuff in this conference, and this is Adam, you know?
The last thing I think I want to wrap up with this, you know, in coming to these conferences for me, and I'm going to get into a little love fest because, you know, I think this is really important because it means a lot to me. And I just want everybody listening to know, what I love about being able to come to something like this is the people from my audience that come and attend and support and, you know, listen to the show and enable me to do the stuff that I do. You know, Gary, Cody, the list goes on and on. David, there was a bunch of people who walked up to me at this conference and just thanked me for doing this podcast. And it's so humbling. And at the same time, it's just like, you know, I feel exactly the same way. It's 100%, you know, maybe even 200% reciprocated because, you know, I'm able to do what I do because you listen, you know, so they're appreciative, I appreciative. And it's really nice to be able to make that connection. And what I love about it is I always have to turn to them. So they turn to me and say, you know, I feel like I know you because you're in my head every week and blah, blah, blah. And at the same time, I have to turn around and say to them, well, I feel like I know you because you've sent me, you know, since 2004, I've probably got 50, 100, I don't know how many emails from you. And that interaction enables me to do what I do. And that's always, you know, an awesome feeling. So, you know, I don't know if you guys got kind of the same experience.
I did. And humbling is definitely the word. I haven't done typical Mac users for 5 years. And, you know, and people came up to me with the same thing. And when I was announced at the round table, there was clapping. And I was like, whoa, you know, just because this community is generous. You know, you guys are generous. I've been listening. You know, Adam helped me get into the Mac. So, and Adam and I are now friends. I mean, that's special stuff. And many of you, I'm sure, went to Macworld. And if you remember what that was like, to go to that coffee shop or to have that little conversation, you can have that feeling back. You know, check out this conference next year. You know, come, you know, and take that risk and come. I did that this year and I don't have a lot of money and I'm coming back. It was really worth it.
I think you mentioned, George, that you had some of those similar experiences as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just show up on your show every now and then, and I did Victor's show for a while, and so I had people even recognize my voice, and even ones that when Ken was doing his call-in show, I helped Ken out because I ran the, you know, I acted as call screener. So I had people that are like, yeah, I loved calling in and talking to you for a little while before talking to Ken. And I'm like, wow, this is kind of crazy. But to what Victor said, you know, even that, just that, I only went to Macworld one time because at the time I just couldn't get away from work, and I was changing jobs, so I was actually able to slip that in. And what he was talking about, you know, those little meetings and all that was great. But this was like this 100% of the time since we've been here, not just the little pockets that you mentioned earlier, Adam, that Macworld was.
Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of one of the things, too, that, you know, there's a catch-22. So Macworld was a great, great conference, you know, and there was a lot of those little moments like what we're talking about here. And I think you made a good point, George, that, you know, here there's much more opportunity, and it's a little bit because of the size. Yeah, it's the size and the focus. And, you know, obviously this is something growing. And what I'd love to see this year, you know, probably the closing thought that I thought coming out of this is, wow, this thing has a lot of momentum. And I really hope that it continues to grow and that our community continues to grow, but only maybe to a point. You know, I kind of don't want it to get too big. And we've experienced this stuff a little bit with what happened with Podcast Expo, New Media Expo. You know, it was great in the early years, and then it kind of grew and grew and grew, and then it eventually became this big giant thing, and it was still good but different. And then, you know, now it's kind of gone. And, you know, something similar kind of happened, I think, with Macworld. You know, if you talk to anybody who was at Macworld, you know, one or two, it's the same sort of thing. And so I don't know, you know, where this is going to go. I think, you know, Mike has done a fabulous job of, you know, putting this together, and I think it's certainly going to grow. We'll see where it goes in the future, but I'm definitely coming back next year. And I would tell anybody listening, you know, if you've been on the fence, if you've been hearing us talk about it, you maybe heard about it last year or the next year, you know, be looking to, it sounds like it's going to be in July again next year. So mark your calendar, kind of get ready. And if you've been waffling, you know, I would say come out. You know, really consider, you know, if you're into this stuff, if you want to meet great people in the community and do it face to face, I think this is the event to go to. I don't. That's my impression. I think this is the next thing. I don't think it's ever going to be another Macworld. A lot of people have said this is the replacement for Macworld. I don't think I'd take it that far, and I don't think I want to take it that far. I wouldn't. But you know, it'd be nice to get some more people out here, and I think it's going to grow.
Me too. Yeah, it's like that, you know, restaurant that you find, you want to tell some friends about, but you don't want everybody to know about. That's what this is like. Yeah.
You feel the same way, George?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up here. You know, and again, MaxTalk 2016, it was really, really fun. I had a really great time. I'm looking forward to coming back next year. And, you know, Victor, thanks. I think, you know, real quick, we should have mentioned this up front. I think we talked about it a few episodes back, but you've been working on a project, and so you have actually some really big news. So tell people about, you know, what happened with your project and what's going on.
Good. No, yeah, I have a new CD, a music CD that has just come out. I found at surrendermusic2016.com. And I think Adam and I are going to do something a little special for this audience that's going to get into it a little bit, way, not just pimping it, you guys, but teaching you how I use Macintosh computer and hardware to make this project that is very significant to me personally.
Right. So again, tell people, so you got a new album out, a jazz album. Tell them where they can buy it and you know, listen to some great music.
Sure. You can find it at CD Baby if you just search for Surrender. But the easy way to do it is surrendermusic2016.com. That'll redirect you right to CD Baby. You can just preview some of the songs. And if you like what you hear, of course, I would love for you, you know, to buy it right now. And it'll be available in iTunes and Amazon and all the streaming services in about 30 to 45 days because CD Baby has to do their thing.
Well, get it early. Just go buy it. Victor won't do it, right. But I'm going to tell you, just go buy Victor's new album. And again, he teased a thing. We already talked about it while we were here. We're going to get into some of the technical nitty gritty because I think it's fascinating. We had some conversations. So look forward to that on a future episode of the MacCast. And then George, yeah, what are you up to these days? We got to get you back on the show to do some more security stuff.
Yep. Well, pretty much I've been doing, you know, a lot of personal stuff and work stuff, but I'm, you know, playing with like 3D printing and things like that. So occasionally stuff will show up on my blog, but you know, the big non-work thing was to take time to come here, and it's just been a really good blast and good time seeing you guys again.
Right. And if people want to follow you, you're on Twitter at George Starcher. Okay, cool. So follow George, follow Victor, and thanks everybody for hanging out. But I think that's going to do it for the episode for today. So thanks for listening, and until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon. So there you go. I hope that gave you a little taste, a little flavor of what went on at MacStock this year. As I said before, I had a great, great time. I'm already putting it on my calendar, on my schedule for next year. I think it's going to be around the same time frame. They haven't set anything firm in stone, but kind of mark out the beginning of July for a couple weeks of July if you're planning on going, and you likely should be okay. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors: Spile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander for iOS, along with PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad, and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all their great apps and software by going to smilesoftware.com/MacCast. And Gazelle. Gazelle is a fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth by going to gazelle.com. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media, and they are at backbeatmedia.com. If you have a comment for me, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on the future episode of the MacCast, you can send me emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline, that phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. If you need show notes, links to anything that I've talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you want to follow me on social media, especially this month as I'm out and about, a good time to do it. You can see what I'm up to on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. And if you prefer Google Plus, we do have a Google Plus community. You'll find that at google.com/PlusMacCast. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.